You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truthful Out Radio. Today's date is Friday the 28th of June 2019 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioAryan.com. We're not actually live tonight, this is pre-recorded earlier in the day. But we do have with us the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, Communism by the Back Door, and the Freemasonic Victory of World War II, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, how are you doing today? It's a glorious sunny day here. How are you today, sir, anyway?
It's a glorious sunny day, and you've got me trapped in my bunker doing a show. How dare you?
With the windows closed and the fans off and the air conditioning off, sweltering into a
Everything
puddle of
bolted,
sweat. Yeah, that's just the way it goes. That's these little things we put up with for our listeners.
This is the game.
Exactly. It is. And let's just talk a little bit about how far you're getting on. You're coming along with the next chapter in the series. Have you made any headway with that before we get into today?
Yes, I actually have. Yeah, surprisingly enough. Yeah, it took me a long time. I think I mentioned last week I was inching forward. Well, big strides this week. Big strides. Still needs work doing on it because I've got I got hold of an interview. I don't know if you can remember him or not. There was a priest once talking about, I think it was Putin he was talking about. But anyway, you were impressed they were talking English. Well, I found another interview of his because he's an expert on Freemasonry. So I took clips of that and, I'm going to put some pictures and footage to it. So that more or less will complete that, part 20, but there'll probably be a part 21.
Problem being is uploading it, isn't it? And you're still having problems uploading to BitChute.
Oh, BitChute's a nightmare. It really is. I mean, I just,
It does seem a lot of people are.
Yeah, well, 1 week, I mean, the first week I got the actual, the part up, but they wouldn't put the photograph up. Now I managed to get them all up and it still won't play, so...
It's not just you that's having this problem, Dennis. I know a lot of people are having problems with uploading stuff to BitChute, and some people have said it doesn't like MP4. I think
that's
somebody
right,
suggested
that. Yeah,
someone suggested MKV. Apparently, that's not right either. There's got to be basically
that's
a format that it
change
prefers.
It too, yeah, didn't work. So
Anybody who knows how to successfully upload to BitChute, please get in touch with us. Because it's holding you back, Dennis. I mean, what are you up to? Chapter 13 on BitChute. There's another 7 chapters.
Well, I've got 13 up, but 13 I'm played. I'm up to 12, actually, after that. Well, that's why I originally stopped uploading, because I was getting so frustrated, because it was uploading for me, obviously. Then suddenly,
Any ideas? Please do send them in. Well, you've also been sent in quite a few of these interviews. We're going to be talking about another interview tonight. We're going to be talking about Ida Göring, the daughter of Hermann Göring, an interview that was done with her. And it's by the same people, I think, that did the interview with Greta Himmler. And I'm just wondering, where are these interviews coming from, Dennis? Do you know much about the people that actually made them at all?
Well, I have a few interviews on a website. A fascinating website, to be honest, www.mourningtheancient.com. And there's a lot of interesting stuff on there from the National Socialists. And in particular, we got some interviews as well. So it's good.
Well, it's good, I think, to hear from, the surviving relatives of those that died during the war. I mean, most of them have passed away now. But when these interviews were done, the war was over, and it was their recollections from what they saw as children, which I think is fascinating. Mm-hmm. And of course, it bears out the view that we discuss here on Truthful Out Radio, that most of what we've been told about the war was a pack of lies. And particularly this interview from Ida Göring. I like the name Ida or Edda. I guess it's based on the Eddas. The ancient history of the Nordics, pre-Christian history, sort of religious thing that was recorded by Snorri Snalsen, I think his name was. This, I think it was a Norwegian monk or something. And I'm guessing she's named after that, which is a nice name to give her. And the first thing she does is talk about her father, of course. And she says, "Sadly, my memories are from later in the war, as I was very young, born in 1938, and nearly seven when it ended. I would like to state my father was a well-liked commander who inspires his men even to this day. I had many former comrades who spoke to me after the war and asked me not to believe anything the Allies said about my father. He always acted correctly and had a deep respect for others. I remember he loved me and my mother very much. He would always lavish us with gifts and take us on shopping sprees in the city, but these I don't remember very well. He always wanted the best for us and had very healthy meals cooked for us. I always dressed up for important guests at our home, and if they brought other children, we would go play outside in my playhouse that had rooms and a stage to dress up and pretend to do opera or dancing." And that bit there, I'd never really thought about that before, about diplomats' children. We understand, I guess, that these MPs, when they're entertaining foreign diplomats, their wives play a part and the wives talk together. Mm. But I never really thought about the children. And obviously these children would have to play with the children of these other diplomats, which is quite a responsibility to have, because obviously, you know, they couldn't fall out with them. You know,
I was just going to say, some kids fall out, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Quite a lot of responsibility.
About this, sorry, I was just going to say, what's interesting about this is how she says he's well-respected, you know, and his men loved him and he always acted correctly. It was made out by the Allies to be a bit of a buffoon. But this kind of opened my eyes up when I got to the Nuremberg trials, when one of the Americans I have in the first documentary admitting that you knew when he was in the room, this was an important guy. And he went on to actually dominate proceedings at Nuremberg. So I think we've been shown a complete total pack of lies about Goering, at least as far as his image goes.
Well, he wasn't an aristocrat for no reason. He was a very important person, served with distinction in the First World War, came from an aristocratic family, an incredibly high IQ. The family had really made something of themselves. He couldn't have been a buffoon the way that the Allies portrayed him. And obviously, his daughter's going to have she's going to have a rose-tinted view of him, but it's basically fits in with logic.
The Americans weren't, though.
yeah. Well, she continues, "He was always happy and friendly. I remember he would help anyone who needed it. He always donated to the charities and the war widows' causes. It affected him deeply when he heard of the death of a comrade or a soldier who fell at the front. He was always jovial and in a good mood, even when it was hard to be. My father was so worried about us later in the war, he moved us to Berchtesgaden to keep us away from the bombings. I enjoyed playing in the mountain air, but I did miss our home, Carinhall. I remember seeing my father in Allied custody for the first time, and he was very confident he would be freed and any charges dropped, as he said he obeyed all the laws of war and did nothing that would harm his reputation and honour." And I think this is the thing, they did expect that. They did expect to be treated justly after the war. You think in that last the last episode we did with Gudrun Himmler, and she said that Himmler said that mention that he was her father and she would be treated well. He was expecting to be treated well by the Allies. None of them expected them to lie about this.
No. The problem is, it's the same people that won World War One. And after World War One, you know, what was usual after the war wasn't the case after World War One, where land and property wasn't returned to the Germans. In fact, after the war, they went on to be stripped of lots of things, including even the cattle and, you know, food stuff, which was transferred out to Germany. And it really was a dishonourable kind of thing to do. But this, after World War One, was the way of the world. And because these were the same people after World War Two, and they weren't particularly impressed at Germany's rise again, that this time they were going to be even harder. And so it proved.
Well, it seems they had no idea that this gas chamber myth was going to be thrown at them. This propaganda myth. They had no idea that that was going to be taken seriously. I think that comes through very, very clearly in these children's memories of them. They certainly didn't expect to be accused of trying to exterminate all the Jews. That was...
I saw footage of him being arrested. I have seen that footage, and he looks really relaxed, and he sat down, chatted away. But obviously, in hindsight, we know what's coming. But he looked completely oblivious to it all. You know, he certainly, there wasn't a frown on his face. Okay, the war was over, we've been defeated. You know, like his daughter said, he hadn't felt he'd done anything wrong. And so, you know, he had nothing to worry about. Consequently, things changed.
He's very, very practical and pragmatic. Okay, now we'll move on, and they have no reason to prosecute them. I mean, they fought a defensive war, basically. And it started off with them trying to protect the Germans in Danzig. They didn't really have any option but to go in there and protect them. They were forced into war, and then it was the war was declared against them. And every time they tried to make peace offers, they were refused. So of course they're going to hope to be well. They're going to expect to be treated well, certainly not expect to be taken to Nuremberg as court criminals. And hanged as criminals for defending their country. Edda continues, my father was a European. He loved the culture of our people, regardless of nationality. He saw talent in every nation and had a deep respect for the art and culture of all nations. Because of his stature and prestige, he received many gifts from very important people. The claim that my father looted works of art is obscene and a lie from his enemies. The claim that Germany stole treasures is equally false. I do remember in 1943 my father speaking to some people and telling them that due to the reckless Allied bombing raids that Europe's treasures were to be saved by removing them to places that were safe. I think there's two things here that we can talk about. The first bit is where she says my father was a European and he loved all the nations in Europe. Well, that sort of contrasts with this Hitler hated the Slavs thing, doesn't it? I mean, he's talking about...
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah, and also, you know, they wanted to turn all these countries into speaking German. They wanted to turn them all into Germans. And certainly not. He had respect for the differences in Europe. Yeah, I mean, that's a white nationalist attitude, isn't it? You know, you see the talent.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to me, it's not extreme, it's centre-ground.
It's you see the talent in every European nation and have deep respect for them. And then this bit about the art treasures, that we're told Germany stole all these treasures. They're damned if they do, damned if they don't. If they'd left the treasures there, the Allies would have bombed them and they would have said the Germans deliberately used these treasures as the equivalent of human shields. And as they moved them and they tried to protect them, they were then accused of stealing them. So the way it seems to me, anyway.
Well, interestingly enough, I was studying the Rothschilds last couple of days and... This is where it came up. They actually stripped the assets off the Rothschilds. I was basically looking at it because people said that Hitler were Rothschild, or this myth. And it just went on to show just exactly what they did. And in Germany, they stripped all the assets. And even worse, in France and in Austria, you know, they imprisoned the Rothschild there and put it up for ransom. And all along, this looting thing was... It was never such a thing. You know, it preserved a lot of the artwork because of the bombings. And they also refused to display a lot of the artwork because the artwork was like weird Jewish stuff, like Picasso's, which were worth a fortune, but they refused to display them in any museums. So, you know, they cared about the artwork. And, you know, who knows where the Rothschilds have plundered them from in the first place.
So we've got two things there, really. We've got saving the artwork from being destroyed, and we've also got removing degenerate artwork from public view.
Correct.
Because you don't want to subvert the people. And this removing the assets of the Rothschilds, that would have been done legally as compensation for war profiteering. Don't forget, the National Socialists had a law that it was a capital crime for war profiteering from World War I. So the Rothschilds were lucky they weren't hanged for... making profits.
They were. They were fortunate about it. Yeah. I mean, when he entered Austria, obviously, if he if he had a hung Rothschild, I think it was Louis Rothschild there, it would have caused a problem, obviously, an excuse for war. So they stuck out for ransom, and I think they turned down 6 million, which was a lot of money at that time, but eventually let him go for 21 million.
I think we can also draw a comparison here. I mean, maybe it's not a particularly, you know, just comparison, but in South Africa, where they're saying, well, we're going to steal the land from the white farmers, mm-hmm. Theresa May goes over there and says, oh, yeah, well, that's perfectly fine, so long as you make a law to allow you to do it. Well, the Germans had a right to get compensation from the people that were war profiteering, and they made a law to do it, and now they're accused of stealing it all, even though they had a law to do it. So it's okay for the Africans to do it, but it's not okay for the Germans to do it. And that's right. just recently. And
also, they had vineyards, which were confiscated, and all the palaces, obviously, the properties. So, they did take a beating. Not all of them got out of Europe. You know, you'd have thought, you know, with the money they had, you know, they would have escaped, but not all of them did do. And some were put in camps, and rightly so.
Hitler was certainly not working for the Rothschilds. I mean, they exposed them in movies as
didn't
well.
Didn't like it.
Well, Edda continues, the Allies bombed indiscriminately, hitting churches, schools, hospitals, and everything else in the cities. So it was necessary to remove paintings and sculptures to castles, caves, and smaller towns that were safe. At no time did my father have any works sent to him that he did not legally purchase or receive as a gift. The Allies are only trying to cover their tracks by blaming my father for looting when they were the masters of looting Europe's treasures. And there are lots of German artworks that are now in Russian museums. That was the looting that went on. The Soviets took
And not just German. Hungarian and all the other Axis countries and all were looted.
I forget the name of this Russian museum where they have them. It might be called the Hermitage or something like that. It's got something to do with monks anyway. It's a very famous museum, and it has lots and lots of German artwork in it, basically. And, I mean, it says here, the Allies were bombing churches, schools, hospitals, everything else indiscriminately. We're told that, Hitler bombed London. So that was why Britain started bombing the cities in Germany. But we're not told that it was... the Allies that first started bombing the cities before Hitler bombed London. I mean, it was deliberately done. It was deliberately done by Churchill to get the British people to be angry at Hitler.
Churchill, in war mode,
He kept going after them, and he's on record, saying, well, why won't Hitler fight back? He wanted him to bomb London, basically, so that he would have this excuse. And then they just went crazy with the terror bombing, just destroyed half of Europe, basically. She continues, we read today in the papers accounts of lost works showing up in Allied soldiers' possessions. In 1945, Europe lay bare, and these vermin swooped in and took whatever they could carry. I know the Führer even ordered works to be safeguarded from destruction, and due to this, they were removed and put in safe storage, so they would not be destroyed. So again, we got two things here. We haven't just got the artworks that were removed by the National Socialists to protect them, but after the war, the Allied soldiers stole loads of artworks. And again, that would have been blamed on Hitler. This artwork's no longer here. It's on the black market. It must have been Hitler that stole it, what they're saying here.
But also, a lot of these paintings, they weren't even unpacked from the time they were taken, say, from France. They were taken straight to safe storage.
Yeah, it's not like they were sort of being displayed somewhere in a private house or something like that. They were all wrapped up and boxed up and
no, they were meant to eventually go to Hitler's hometown in Linz, where he was born, for a museum to display them all. That was the idea eventually.
Well, she says here they were taking them to smaller towns because the smaller towns were safe. She says the Allies looted the works my family owned, and then the German government jumped in to steal even more. works that were given to me as gifts and were taken back with the false claims that they were only given due to pressure from my father. What ridiculous antics. Now Jews are getting into the fray by claiming works that they legally sold for profit were stolen. They then get them back free of charge. It has become quite a lucrative racket to claim the National Socialist government stole everything. So this is the thing, that a lot of these artworks were actually sold, and then of course now, especially these Jews, they will say, oh, it was stolen from us, so give it back. And obviously with the Jewish pressure, they succeed in doing that. Germany just bends over backwards for them.
Well, every now and again, you get the old, we found some Nazi gold, or we found some Nazi art treasures. You know, if I'm found them by now, they never will, you know what I mean?
Oh, she continues, you have to understand the undercurrent of post-war Europe. The Allies dominated everything. They murdered many people who were National Socialists, put millions in jail for political beliefs, and struck a fear into most people. When they came asking questions, all of a sudden people did not want to admit being in the party or liking Hitler. They were afraid, so they agreed when the Allies suggested that works of art were forcibly sold and deceptively acquired. They were rewarded by receiving good treatment and compensation for lying. So again, I mean, we see this today, don't we? People don't want to admit to being a nationalist, and you know, they don't want to be exposed. And it was the same here. And yet, the National Socialists were massively popular. I mean, they were winning 99% in their plebiscites, in approval ratings.
Yeah, well, life had never been so good at it in Germany until they came along.
She said, I have had enough of my father's friends tell me he never did any of these things, that I'm sure he has made a scapegoat. The Allies are the real thieves, and they then point the finger to my father. Much like the lie of Germany killing Jews in a planned way, the art thefts are the same thing, misunderstood and exaggerated. So again, I mean, that we are told so many lies about World War II, not just the gas chambers, not just the work camps, but also this alleged stealing of art. And it's her father's friends that are telling her this as well.
Yeah, and you can understand it, because over the last, 70 years, things have unfolded, and we can see, various things, what went on and what had been hidden, and you can well understand what she's saying.
Well, next she talks about Hitler. And she is asked, do you remember anything about Hitler? She says, very little. He was my godfather, and I have seen the many photos taken of me being held by him. I only remember how caring he was, and always made sure I had a snack or a dessert when I visited. I will tell you now, I do not believe any of the stories the Allies tell about him. He was a good man, a true leader of our people, and loved by countless millions. It is sad that it is the war that has to define him. And of course, they cover up all his great achievements, and just talk about the war.
Well, they actually deny him.
Yeah.
Well,
And the fact that he was a godfather. I mean, that shows this wasn't just a working relationship that politicians had. These were people that were united by a love of their country, by a love of their people. And they obviously, Goering obviously thought very, very highly of Hitler as a man, to say that he wanted him to be the godfather of his child.
There were friends and families, same outlook on life,
And that's at the christening as well. So again, it shows you Goering was a Christian. And Chris christened his daughter. She's then asked, what did your mother think of him? And she replies, she always said he was a great man and that she was fortunate enough to live to see him. She said, a leader like the Führer has never been seen since the time of Christ. She remembered how kind and warm he was, how he cared for all people and only wanted to see Europe live in peace. Something you may be interested in knowing is that there were many Jews who supported him, and he had no animosity towards them. Only the wealthy usurpers who were trying to destroy us. Again, we've talked about this. The Jews that were in the camps were communists. And it was any communist that was put in the camps, not just Jews. Jews that were half Jews or quarter Jews that supported the National Socialists, you know, they were fighting in the army. They didn't see it as the one drop rule. Anyone who's got a drop of Jewish blood, you know, they need to be out. They actually allowed these quarter Jews to serve in the army. They didn't want them marrying Germans, obviously. They wanted them to marry within their own kind. But they actually wanted the best for the Jews, like they did for all nations. You know, they wanted to teach the Jews the value of work. They wanted them to be nationalists. I mean, this is why they helped out the Zionists by having the transfer agreement and sending them off to Israel. And they were trained up before then. They were trained up to, you know, to farm and to be able to do useful jobs once they actually got over that. Never an idea to just exterminate a people. And what excuse do they tell us that the Germans had for wanting to exterminate a people? They never really give us one.
Well, they give it the superior Aryan race. We are superior to everybody, and we'll dominate, and we'll kill those who don't go up to scratch, and the Jews are only rats. And so it builds a kind of a, outside of Germany, when you're told all this, a lot of people, you know, we've got people, you know, have this thought now, this wicked Aryan race who wants to dominate the world and kill everybody who's not up to scratch. And they're just led down, more easily led down a road then of the hatred.
Well, that isn't the way things are, is it? I mean, if you are...
Not at all.
If you are of a superior intelligence, then the general idea is that you're supposed to set a good example and you're supposed to help people out. It doesn't mean you want to kill everybody who's not of superior intelligence. And it's illogical, isn't it?
I mean, that's the problem. They did. The Bolsheviks did. They went into these countries.
They weren't superior. That's the thing. They weren't superior, were they? They were the ones that wanted to destroy everyone. Were the Bolsheviks.
They claimed to be. Yeah, they claim to be the chosen ones, but their way is to go around destroying.
You know, the intelligentsia, they become politicians and they lead in the government. And they're supposed to be, you know, they're supposed to rise to the top and they're supposed to have our best interests at heart and they're supposed to do what's best for the country. But, you know, they're not supposed to look at themselves and think, well we're not superior, we're inferior. You don't want inferior people in charge. You want the best people in charge because you think that they're going to do the best for you. So it's totally illogical to say that because they thought they were superior, they wanted to kill everybody else.
Well, I think it was a means to an end. I think they thought if they kill all the intelligent people, then the rest of the nation won't have enough about them to either work things out and even rise up against them because they're easily dumbed down. And this is exactly what they've done.
Oh, it's projection as well, isn't it? I mean, it's the Jews that see themselves as superior, and their religious literature it tells them that one goyim life isn't worth a Jewish fingernail, and the best of the Gentiles should all be killed. Slaves. Yeah, it's their religious literature which is supremacist and wants to kill everybody who's not a Jew, and they projected that onto the Germans. They said, "Well,
interesting enough, in Communism by the Back Door, I showed a piece." Where this particular rabbi were demonstrating, couldn't have done it more clearly, where he compared a bucket of water, once emptied, and you know the goyim with a few drops around the side of the bucket left in the bucket, where the water the whole water was being a Jew, and it was his way of explaining the gap, as he said right at the very end, and you want to be like them.
Yeah, I remember seeing that as well. And it was, a distortion of the book of Isaiah and then Talmudic bits added to it. Edda continues, she said it was only after the war that the Allies made it look like he targeted all Jews for killing. I know that is not true because I would see them in Berlin, even up to 1944. My mother was a very intelligent woman. She would never have associated with bad people. This is just one of the many reasons why I know the claims and accusations against National Socialism and my father are not true. So you got an eyewitness account there saying that Jews were still in Berlin. in 1944, and sure. And why would these people associate with bad people? It's like Himmler when his daughter was saying, well, he was the chief of police. He joined the police because he wanted to go after the bad guys, not that's because right. He was a bad guy. I mean, so much of what we're told, it's illogical, but because we're told it so much and so often and all the time,
yeah.
People Hollywood. Just don't question it. She's then asked whether she saw Goering at Nuremberg, and she says, yes, my mother and I and pretty much all family members of the men who were on trial were also imprisoned. Me, a young child, was under guard by Allied soldiers and not allowed to come and go. My father even had a brother who was in favour of the monarchy and so rejected National Socialism as being too revolutionary. He too was imprisoned. The German media cast him as an anti-Nazi hero, but he was not. Like my father, he had many Jewish friends. He would help them if they ran into trouble, and I felt he was used many times, though as he seemed too good-natured that he could seem gullible. His help was only his nature, not a political statement. My mother told me my father understood the trial was the lies the victors agreed upon, and he was a scapegoat. He tried to point that out, but it failed. He told me to stay strong and remember him always, as he loved my mother and me dearly. I can share with you today that he had a few Americans who knew he was innocent, and they did not want to see him hang, so they gave him poison. This was confessed to me. Not all the Allies were bad. Some saw the truth of what had happened, and they were ashamed. So, here's a hint of how Goering was given that cyanide capsule, because there were a few...
Right.
A few rumours about it. I hadn't actually heard mm-hmm. of this brother of his that was cast as an anti-Nazi hero.
No, I hadn't, to be fair.
And what was this other bit? Yeah, that she was saying his helping these Jews was just in his nature to help people. It wasn't a political statement. I mean, and that's like the Catholic Church. You know, the Catholic Church, it did help some Jews, and it also helped the Germans after the war. And you know, we've talked about the Catholic Church and how it funded yeah. for a lot of the National Socialists to get to South America. But as mm-hmm. Bishop Williamson said, that you know, they also helped some of these Jews that needed help. And it was just a question of helping people rather than a political statement. And I think that was the situation with a lot of the National Socialists. I mean, even Hitler, sometimes there were Jews that had fallen foul of the law, and he would use his discretion to say, well, it doesn't apply to this one because I know him personally.
Yeah.
I forget the name of them, but he had some that were he was quite close to, didn't he? Some of these Mischlings. We were not yeah. told about that. She's then asked, what was life like for you after the war? She says, it was a somber survival. The Allies kept my mother and me, and when we were released, I was sent to a girls' school to get a good education. I was always around supporters and NS thinkers. The Allies tried to bring in many communists and Jews, almost as if they wanted to further punish us by putting these people in charge. I was able to stay away from these people and finish schooling, getting my degree. Many of my father's friends sought me out to offer help and services. I was advised to not talk to the press, as my words would be twisted, and I could get into trouble if I said something nice about my father or the Führer. Therefore, I have largely stayed quiet, but it is nice telling someone what I know. Some in the family have completely bought into what the enemies of Germany have forced us to believe. Now, I think because Goebbels and Magda Goebbels, because they committed suicide with the children, I think because of that, the Allies then treated the other children extra well instead of doing what was done to Mussolini. Instead of doing that, I think they deliberately treated Edda and Himmler's daughter a lot better than they would have done otherwise, because they wanted to make right. Magda Goebbels look like a real devil for doing that. Oh, as if the Allies sure. would rape these children and ruin their lives. If she hadn't have committed suicide, I think they would have done. So in a way, that helped these children.
Not only that, there was a book what came out in the early 30s, Germany must perish. So there was a feeling, especially in America, I mean, press praised the book, believe it or not. There was a feeling, obviously, in Germany that there would be, you know, mass slaughtered after the war, which is one reason why they never gave up. And, you know, a lot of people outside Germany would have known this. And so, you know, the Margenthau Plan was done quietly under wraps, with Roosevelt and Churchill denying it. You know, first they weren't going to do it after they signed the agreement. They did it secretly. And so you look at Germany today and people think, oh, look at Germany, they're a powerful nation again. But I asked the question in Communism by the Back Door, how could this be possible with everything what happened to Germany, the starvation after World War One? They'd lost the two world wars. They were down with the guilt put on them by this so-called Holocaust. And suddenly they're rising up again, you know, to be a powerful nation. And what I found was quotes from certain people saying that Germany only survives today to serve Israel. And I believe that's true.
Yeah, that's basically the way it is, isn't it? Germany just bends over backwards for Israel and does whatever Israel demands.
Have you seen Merkel lately?
It's shaking and trembling. Has she got Parkinson's disease or something? She's got something seriously wrong with her, I think.
She got something seriously wrong with her, yeah. Her whole body shakes, not just an arm or, you know.
Yeah, something very strange is going on there, some neurological condition. We'll have to wait and see. But I was just thinking here, when she's saying that she was locked up with her mother by the Allies, and they hadn't actually committed any crimes. And we've got all this fuss that's being made over criminals being locked up with their children when they're trying to break into America at the moment and saying what a terrible thing it is. And yet that's the way things were after the war. They locked up these mothers and these children simply because their father was high up in the National Socialist government and put them in the same prison. So, you know, that's just the way things are. She continues, it is too hard for the truth to be told. So the lies of the victorious Allies, especially the Americans, are spewed every day in the papers and on TV. Anyone in Germany today who tries to tell the truth can lose his or her pension, plus face jail, plus fines and loss of property. Only another reason why I know Hitler was a good leader. The world has to force people to believe a certain way, otherwise you pay a price. So much for freedom of thought and belief. Yeah, I mean, that's a good point there. Why would they punish people so much and make it illegal to ask questions about the gassings if this was a true story? They have
there's
to
two
make
problems
them
out. That as well.
Go on.
Because someone said to me in a comment, even the Germans admit they were doing this and they were doing that. Do you understand what I'm saying? You know, he's took it like that, you know, they've just admitted it, where obviously they've got repercussions if they don't say what needs to be heard.
And there was the denazification process after the war, where they... Yeah. Basically lied, brought them into the camps and said that, you know, this is what the Germans have been doing. People were allowed in the camps during the war. So they must have been bussing in people from outside the areas where the camps were in order to brainwash them. Because, you know, as we heard last week, Himmler's daughter was allowed to walk around in the camps. And then after that, they bombarded Germany with all this pornography and degenerate sex things and saying, lose yourself in this. After making them feel really bad and really guilty, they sort of promoted immoral lifestyles as the solution to the guilt, which of course, you know, made them feel even guiltier. And German people today, they're timid. It's like they've been beaten down. They're frightened just to say they love their country. It's
well, the best of them were all executed. The best of them. So what we was left with were, you know, as you say, beaten down and timid. And today, not the same place. Especially with all the Africans coming in to welcome all in. You know, they were actually committing suicide.
And as she says here, they put Jews and communists in charge, as if, you know, as if they hadn't been harmed enough.
The worst thing you can do.
Yeah, and a lot of these Jews and communists were the ones that had actually been expelled from Germany or had left Germany of their own accord once Hitler came to power, and they put them back in power.
Well, the Americans asked for people who could speak German, which meant a lot of Jews who previously lived in Germany and left because of Hitler could now go back to Germany and take revenge, which they did.
And they took a lot of pleasure in carrying out their revenge, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
She then asked, "Do you not believe the NS government did anything bad?" And she says, "I believe the Allies were the aggressor and started the war, committed many war crimes, and then blamed everything on Germany. Dresden is a good example. They bombed a city which was a refugee centre, killing most likely a huge number that is covered up, and then blame Hitler, as if they had to do this to show they were right and we were wrong." And I think that this is the point, because the terror bombing was so extreme. I think at the end of the war, they thought, you know, we're going to have to come up with something even worse than this terror bombing. Otherwise, we're the ones that are going to look bad. So we're going to have to say that they tried to exterminate an entire people and were gassing them, because otherwise the Allies would have looked looked terrible for what they had done.
Well, I'm saying it amuses me. It did amuse me at times to hear some people, again, you know, either in documentaries or in comments on YouTube, they would say, look what Hitler did to Germany, and then show, you know, a flattened city, as if Hitler was telling the bombers to drop bombs.
Well, that is the way the Germans think today, isn't it? Thank God the Allies came and bombed Germany and rescued us from Hitler. Just think what the world would be like today if they hadn't done that. You know, at the Dresden commemorations, you've got Antifa there saying, "Go on, Bomber Harris, do it again."
Yeah.
You know, literally asking to be bombed again. And a lot of them think, well, it would be a good idea if we did just die out and get replaced because we're so wicked.
Well, this is it. The automatic vision, what people think of in the West now of a Nazi, they made him just more than the devil, if you like, you know, the insane devil. And so they've done that job so completely. And then they turn on the ordinary white person and say, "You're a Nazi." And instantly this wicked, evil devil is now on ordinary white people who are just trying to be either Brexiting or, you know, what they want a sovereign country. And they've been now labelled with it as well. It's all mass mind control.
Well, that's what they say about Hitler, isn't it? Oh, he went mad. Hitler went insane.
Yeah.
You know, because they can't explain why the people would support him, or they can't explain, you know, why you'd be trying to defend Germany if the Allies' story is all true. He must have been insane.
The hypnosis comes in, doesn't it? You know, the excuse of the masses hypnosis.
Was he dangling a watch thing in front of them on the television or something, trying to hypnotize them all?
The other thing as well. They always blame the Nazis for putting fluoride in the water. And they'll say, you know, the Nazis did all these things. They put fluoride in the water to keep the nation, you know, so they wouldn't rise up. And they're saying that, and nobody's realizing that the fluoride's still going in the water over here. So,
but I don't think they did that. I don't think they did that. I think it was the Soviets that did that.
No, I don't think they did. No.
And if the Germans had done it, then it would have been because they thought it would have been good for people's teeth. I mean, that's what fluoride is portrayed as, being good for people's teeth. As you say, they put it in the water today in some areas.
Well, it's toothpaste. Yeah. So,
she says, "My father."
It's obvious, but people don't click.
She says, "My father hated using the Luftwaffe to wage war. He hated bombing England, but I know England bombed Germany first and hit our cities first. All governments may not be perfect, but under Hitler, Germany was close. The stories I was told make me wish I could have experienced more of what life was like. On the battlefields, there may have been small incidences of crimes, but it was not the intention of Germany to stoop to the Allies' level. I think that was the thing. They refused to be as immoral as the Allies. And they had capital punishment for mistreatment.
Yeah. There's just no honour. It stems from, if you look after World War One, what the Allies did, they brought in this treaty to eventually kill Germany, if you like. There was no honour at all in that. And these are the same people. These are the same people. And you see the same thing down in Iraq, in the prison down there when all these prisoners, all the photos were being taken. These are the same people with the same mentality. There's no honour no more.
It was totally forbidden to mistreat the prisoners. And yet you read this Holocaust pornography and they talk about prisoners arriving at Auschwitz and every one of them has all their teeth punched out and they're all beaten to a pulp. And, if there was any mistreatment of prisoners, it was a capital punishment. I think there were some SS officers were hanged for mistreatment of prisoners. Right. In work camps, and there were strict investigations. The Red Cross were brought in there. The Red Cross were present in every camp to make sure that there was no mistreatment. And yet we're told that they were absolute monsters, and Mengele was carrying out all these experiments on. It's all absolutely impossible. And the whole point of National Socialism was setting a good example and being the best that you can possibly be. And this is why they hide this stuff.
I think that's why they're so stickling on there's got to be no investigation. I think it's obvious.
What, no investigation of it?
Yeah. That has to be the reason, because if you did investigate, it'd be obvious.
Well, it's just totally illogical.
Investigating, which is incriminating, swimming pools, football teams.
Swimming pools, orchestras, camp money.
And that's where...
Brothel.
Proper investigation.
Yeah, that's just amateur investigation.
Yeah, exactly. And it's there. You can't bury that lie because there's so many contradictions. So they'll just say, no, it happened. That's it. End of story.
She says, most of all, Germans who lived during the Third Reich would give anything to go back to those times minus the war. I have never heard anything bad from those who lived in it. Except the communists, who were put in camps if they agitated against the state, they are the biggest driving force of the critics to the Führer today, all in positions of big power and very wealthy. Like rats, more and more have come forwards to claim they were victims so they can collect money. And I'm sure they were not victims of anything. And you can look at... You can look at what Adolf Hitler did and what the principles of National Socialism were, and you can see that everybody had a much better life. They had new homes, they had new autobahns, they were all employed, the more children they had, the more of the house was paid for. Each one of the houses had enough land with it so that they could grow their own crops.
Cars.
Yeah, special cars. The new industrial centres had villages built around them so that they didn't have to transport stuff from one end of the country to the other for it to be worked on. A lot of environmental ideas. Get a Clean Air Act, the first Clean Air Act, limited working hours, women encouraged to be mothers and men encouraged to work. The brightest kids were sent to special schools with the very best of everything in them. And kids in the cities were taken out to the farms so that they could get an appreciation for the people that worked on the farms that produced the food. So they were seen as just as important as the intellectuals because they were all part of the same race and part of the same nation. They were taught how to love the other European nations because they were all part of one race, taught that they were part of the same family. And even more so in their nation, rather than class war and rather than being jealous of the upper class, they were taught to work together and to cooperate, class cooperation, not these unions. It got rid of usury. Everything was based upon traditional Christian morals. Of course the people are going to want to go back and live in that time.
England.
Most
people accept this way of living as the only way. Recessions and no jobs. all this is accepted, as if it must be this way. But National Socialism found there was another way, and obviously the people in power on our side didn't want that particular lifestyle being known, because it would have disrupted everything what they'd been gaining.
Well, they prevented the pleasure boats from even landing in Britain because they didn't want the British people to see how well the Germans were treated by their government. I mean, they had all these cultural programs as well. They would have traveling orchestras and traveling operas that would travel around the rural areas so that the people that lived in the villages could get an idea of what high culture was like and an idea of the great things that the German nation were responsible for musically. And in art,
that race, which is completely opposite to what we have today. There should be no race. Everyone should be the same, all the same color. And Merkel was one of them. A lot of damage upholding that kind of outlook.
Well, they talk about poverty and equality and trying to bring the lower classes up today. The National Socialists did that. That's what they were all about, was encouraging people to be the very best that they could be, and they gave them a helping hand up. But they didn't just say, "Well, we're going to give you handouts." It was, "We'll give you the encouragement and the help you need to make something of yourself," rather than we're just going to give you money to sit there and breed. People were encouraged to be the very best they could be. They were told that they could be the very best. That's supremacy today.
It's the only government that I know, apart from maybe Gaddafi's, where it looked to the people, to help the nation. Other than Gaddafi's, I can't think of another. Because all they do today is make sure that, they're rich and, well off. And, we get the scraps. Simple as.
Now, Gaddafi was a nationalist. He was all about Libyan nationalism. He was a nationalist government. Then she's asked, did Hitler not turn on Goering at the war's end? She says, "From what I have been told and understand, the end of the war was very confusing. My father was next in line to the Führer, and in April 1945, he honestly believed Hitler was unable to effectively lead any more, as Berlin was destroyed and surrounded. His telegram was a simple request to ask the Führer if he should assume control. But I believe those who were influencing Hitler were misunderstanding the picture. At least, I hope that was their reasoning." Now, I'm not really sure I know this much about this. Do you know much about this bit, Dennis? Telegram.
Well, it was both Himmler and Goering, who Hitler decided was no longer in the party. He classed them as traitors for trying to negotiate with the British behind his back. That was the reason that I was told. And so that's why I put Dönitz in charge. Otherwise, I think it would have been Goering, because Goering were number two. Or it would have been Himmler as well, if not Goering. So, at the end, it was made to look like they were traitors and Hitler abandoned them.
Well, General Goering, I mean, he was the head of the Luftwaffe, wasn't he? It was like sort of the head of the RAF. And I guess he's in a different part of the country. I mean, that's quite sensible. If Hitler is surrounded in Berlin and it's destroyed, he's asking if he should assume control. Bormann is the one who is supposed to have told Hitler, "My father was a traitor, but I do not believe that. I believe there was a misunderstanding due to the confusion at the end. My father was confined with us, and I remember he was very frustrated as he was working to get as many people safely to the Western Allies as he could, as the Russians were raping and looting where they had been. As the situation in Berlin deteriorated and people saw what was happening, we were released so my father could further work on reaching the Allies to secure safe passage for all the fleeing refugees. More and more of his men came to Obersalzberg to organize, but he sent them home to their families as he wanted to spare them." So this is what was going on at the end of the war. They were trying to keep people safe, basically, and keep all these refugees safe. Because
a lot of confusion. And on top of that, you've got the Allies giving their version of things what are happening. And, at the end, who knows? Because, there was that much confusion. Most people go along with what the Allies have said were happening because a lot of them believed them. But, there's one or two things which, raise questions.
Well, as you said before, this advancing Red Army, people wanted to surrender to the Allies because they thought if they surrendered to the Allies would be responsible for them and they wouldn't hand them over to the Russians, which is what actually happened. But it looks like what was happening here is that Goering was trying to arrange that. He was trying to get as many people safely to the Western Allies as possible before the Red Army got to them. And when his men came to Obersalzberg, he just sent them home to their families, saying, go back and look after your families. Go back and protect them from what's coming. These Bolsheviks are making their way through, massacring and raping and looting. Yeah. So do you think that, there's a partial, she's saying it's a slander here that it was Bormann who told Hitler her father was a traitor, but someone must have done that. Someone must have suggested that to him.
Yeah, who knows? Like I said, what can be proven there? I mean, when the Allies are saying that Hitler committed suicide even, there's still confusion over who's got the body, who's seen the body, was there a body? There seems a lot of contradictions, over the end of the war.
Well, it's very interesting to get this alternate view anyway from these... from these relatives of the National Socialist leadership. Hopefully you'll get some more, Dennis, and you'll get sent some more of them, and we'll be able to cover more of them. This is, this is good stuff. Well, thank you very much for coming on today.
Okay, no problem.
Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next Friday with more Truth Without Radio for you. And, of course, we do hope you all have a lovely summer's weekend ahead of you.